segment. He is the man behind HockeyAbstract.com, but also the author of StatShot, and he joins us now, Rob Volman, down the South Street Burger guest hotline. So did you sell out all of your books over Christmas? Because I saw a lot of people got it. There were lots of pictures on the old Twitter machine.
Yeah, it was a happy Christmas for a lot of people. But you know, if you're listening and your family dropped the ball on this one, you can still get a copy of StatShot from your bookstore, from Amazon, from the publisher, from me at HockeyAbstract.com. But make sure to let your family know that they really disappointed you by failing to purchase you a copy of StatShot.
I think that, Rob, that's good advice on any subject, but I absolutely, the more you remind your family of their failings, I think the better it is for everybody. Let's morph into, I want to get to your two articles here, but Pat brought up a good point during the break, and he said, you know, we ought to ask Mr. Volman about this. So we were talking a couple of segments ago about the Florida Panthers. They're now 15 games into Tom Rowe as their head coach. And if you look at the traditional metrics, Rob, it's not been that great, quite honestly. Their record is 4-5-6. They've got 14 points in 15 games. You know, their goals for are down. Power play is not really effective. But as Pat pointed out, that, you know, what they tried to do is affect their possession numbers, and those are going up. What's your evaluation of 15? And it's, you know, it's incomplete, obviously, but 15 games in, what are we seeing from Florida?
Well, you know, you're right. It is hard to do with a small sample size, but we know it's exactly the same team. I mean, Tom Rowe's roster is the same as Gerard Gallant's roster. So, you know, we can really narrow down the difference to two things, the coaching and the puck luck. Now, you know, I've always argued that coaching is a huge factor, and I've talked about this on the show for years. And so some people might say, you can chalk up the entire difference to coaching, or at very least to the adjustment that you have to take when your new coach comes in. But I think puck luck is the bigger thing here, because as you pointed out, there's a disconnect between their underlying numbers and their traditional stats like goals for, goals against, and wins. When there's a disconnect, you know, absent an explanation, absent, you know, a good theory as to why a team would be doing so much better than the underlying, or so much worse, I should say, than the underlying metrics, you kind of have to assume that there's some puck luck at play that will even out over the long run, especially since I've told you, even though Gerard Gallant's a great coach, Tom Rowe was one of the best AHL coaches of modern times. So they didn't go from Gerard Gallant to an average or below or a replacement level coach. They actually went from a good coach to another good coach. And that's why I think this is mostly puck luck.
And Rob, I would tend to agree, because when you see a possession swing where they were at 51.6% under Gallant in the 15 games under Rowe, they've bumped up more than 2% in the shot-based metrics to 53.7%. That's a big bump. But is 15 games too small a sample size to really be able to say one way or the other that they've been able to increase that? Or is 15% something that, or 15 games rather, something that is somewhat telling in this regard?
No, I think 15 games is still too small. And even for people that want to push the spreadsheets aside, I'm like, fine, watch them play. You know, watch them play under Gallant and watch them play under Rowe, and you'll see that they're the same team and they're controlling the play just as often. They're playing just as well. They've just had some hard bounces. They've had some hard losses. And if you don't believe me, I mean, look at some of the coverage from the local sports writers down there, like George Richards of the Miami Herald. I mean, they'll explain that, you know, Florida has been playing well. They've just taken some tough losses, and that can happen. I mean, if you want to judge a team on 15 games, well, then you might as well give the Stanley Cup to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Teams go through hot streaks, and they go through slumps. The only thing that's different about this one is it occurred right after a coaching change.
Let's shift gears from a team and talk a little bit about an individual, Robin. And we haven't talked about him much, quite honestly, because Calgary hasn't seen Los Angeles much, but you know, Anze Kopitar joined that elite club of guys that make $10 million per season. And right now for the L.A. Kings, Kopitar is really, really struggling if you look at his numbers. You know, 30 games, he has 16 points. When you look at a guy like Kopitar, is there anything that jumps out at you? And again, the sample size, it's early on in the season, but that's not what they expect from Anze.
Yeah, it is a surprise. Because Anze Kopitar, I mean, he's led the Kings in scoring for seven straight seasons, if my memory serves, maybe give or take. And I think the record is held by a former Los Angeles King, Wayne Gretzky, who led his team in scoring for, I don't know, at least 12 seasons in a row. So it's quite a surprise to basically lead the team every single year and then all of a sudden struggle to score. In these sorts of situations, I often wonder if there's perhaps an injury at play or a personal injury issue at play. I haven't read anything to that effect, but whenever I see such a surprising slump like this from such a consistent player like Kopitar, sometimes I have to wonder that.
Funny, we talk about Kopitar, and you know, I think we all expect him to get out of this slump. And I think it was last week, Rob, we were talking about the Kings and how they're one of the teams that you think might be poised for a really nice second half run. How much of that is Kopitar maybe having things start to bounce his way in the second half of the season?
Oh, I think that's definitely a big part of it. And if you want an example, last year, the Anaheim Ducks, at this point of the season, were really struggling. They weren't scoring. Getzlaff wasn't scoring. Corey Perry wasn't scoring. And we are having the same conversation we're having about Kopitar. We are having about Getzlaff and Perry. And then what happened? They really started to catch fire, which helped the Ducks catch fire. And they were definitely the hottest team of the second half, won the division, charged into the playoffs. And so, absolutely, I think that the same sort of thing could happen to Los Angeles with Kopitar, if he's able to get back to his scoring ways, just like Perry and Getzlaff were last year for the Ducks.
And yet, in a lot of ways, it kind of feels similar to 2 years ago with the Kings, doesn't it? In that, you know, they continue to have the puck a lot. They continue to outshoot opponents. They continue to spend more time in the offensive end than almost anyone else does in the league. And yet the results aren't there. And 2 years ago, they were one of the top teams. I think they were still the number one possession team in the league and missed the playoffs in a lot of ways due to some bad luck. And you kind of wonder if things aren't shaping up for them to be in a similar boat this year.
Yeah, they've led the league in shot-based metrics on and off for 6 years, and some people think the Kings are an example of a team that's gaming the system by taking a lot of low-quality shots. So they have good shot-based metrics because they're taking low-quality shots. But my counter-argument is always that low-quality shots, like truly low-quality shots, they're a lot less frequent than you think. I mean, watch an NHL game. It doesn't have to be the Kings. Watch anybody play and count the number of shots that you really think are harmless. Because in today's NHL, even a fourth-line player is dangerous. And even a shot from the point, it can be off the rush. It can be after a cross-ice pass. It can be screened. It can be deflected. It could generate a rebound. I mean, the number of truly low-quality shots in an NHL game is a lot smaller than most people think.
Just for those, I think I know what it meant, but just can you flesh out gaming the system?
Well, there's a lot of people that think, you know, that you can artificially skew your shot-based metrics. That is to say, you can have a better plus-minus in shots. You can outshoot your opponents by a wider margin if you just pepper the goalie from wherever, rather than trying to get in close and set up a high-quality shot, just taking shots from whatever. It makes you look better than you really are and makes you look like you played a better game than you really did. And just my counter-argument is simple. If you watch games, you'll notice that low-quality shots really aren't a thing. I mean, they exist, but they're really not as common as people think. You might be able to add two or three truly low-quality shots in a game, but not 20 or 30 or 40. And Los Angeles's their shot-based metrics are just way too dominant to just be gaming the system.
Rob Volman from Hockey Abstract, hockeyabstract.com, and the author of StatShot, our guest. Let's switch to your two articles this week. We'll start with the ESPN article first. Interesting that we're now starting to see, the rookies have, for the most part, have gone through the league. Auston Matthews starting to heat up. Patrick Laine didn't need any time. He heated up right away. Let's talk about some of the young goal scorers in the league and our expectations for them in the second half.
Okay, well, let me poll both of you right now and ask you, from January 1st forward, for the rest of the season, for the second half, which rookie is going to score the most goals? Is it going to be Patrick Laine? Is it going to be Auston Matthews? Or your third choice is just the field? So anyone, VC, Marner, Tkachuk, whoever, just the field. Which of those three would you pick?
You know, I'm going to go with Marner only because he's really starting to...
Matthews?
Matthews. I'm going to go with Matthews because Matthews is really starting to heat up. What about you?
I think I'd go with Laine just because of
what
how
he does.
It's what he does, of how explosive he is at it. I think I would guess Laine.
You know, of course, we won't know for a few months, of course, but I asked 500 fans on Twitter, and you can follow me on Twitter, Rob Bowman NHL, and 68% said Laine, 22% had Matthews, and 10% had the field. My pick is the field, because I went back 10 years all the way to the lockout, and only one time did the rookie leader in the first half also lead in the second half, and that was Alexander Ovechkin. So the odds are against Laine there. And as far as Matthews go, well, 7 times out of 10, the winner in the second half wasn't even in the top 3 in the first half. So 3 times it was someone in the top 3, 7 times it wasn't. So the smartest bet is that someone, whether that's Marner, whether that's Nylander, whether it's VC, whether it's Kachuk, whether it's Rantanen, whether it's Mantha, somebody is just going to get really hot, really lucky, find the back of the net, and charge past Laine and Matthews, not on the season, just in the second half. Now, if you're forcing me to choose between Laine and Matthews, I'm taking Matthews because he has much higher shot volumes. His shooting percentage in the NHL is much more consistent with what it was in Switzerland, whereas Patrick Laine, he's scoring on close to 20% of his shots. That's not what he did in the World Cup of Hockey, and that's not what he did in Finland. He's definitely scoring on far more of his shots than he has in the past.
Let's switch to your NHL.com column, and we've talked about this on and off for the last month or so about, you know, 2016, not necessarily seasons, but calendar years, and you've put together your all-star team for the year 2016.
That's right. So it's based on the second half of last season, the playoffs, and then the first half of this season. So as a perfect example, the center was an easy pick. Sidney Crosby had an amazing year. He led the entire NHL with, I think it was 59 goals if you include the playoffs in 2016, 115 points across the board, 13 game winners. He was just sensational, not to mention he was the captain and MVP of both the Stanley Cup and the World Cup. So he was the easy one. But the rest of the lineup, of course, was a little bit more of a challenge. Do you want to take a stab at what some of the players might have been?
In terms of calendar, I have to think Brent Burns is in there. Because he had a great year, you know, he had a great season last year, and he started off strong again this year. Am I close?
Yeah, Brent Burns, I think, was my easier choice on the blue line because he's one of only 3 players to score 100 points this year, including the playoffs. And, you know, he dominated. I think he had, he led the league in shots. I think he had like 130 more shots than any other defenseman.
Wow.
Now, I'd like to give some kudos to Chris Letang, who was really number 2 in most of those areas. And Letang's not a player that I think normally gets his due as one of the best defensemen. So it's nice to finally recognize Brent Burns. And I think we're going to want to try an opportunity to get Chris Letang his recognition sometime soon as well.
I would imagine Patrick Kane on that. He wins the Hart Trophy. He wins the Art Ross Trophy. I would imagine Kane found his way into that All-Star team as well.
Yeah, not a lot of surprise on the right wing. Patrick Kane, first American-born player to win the Art Ross and the Hart. He was also second in regular season scoring in 2016 behind Sidney Crosby. So you might like Nikita Kucherov. You might like Vladimir Tarasenko. You might even like Artemi Panarin, who's on the left side of Kane's line. And those are all excellent choices. But I really think Patrick Kane became the archetype of what a scoring line winger is really all about. Now, he might get soon surpassed by Tarasenko or someone like that. But at the moment, I think we have to recognize that 2016, he was the dominant scoring line winner.
Did you pick a goalie, by the way?
Yeah, that we talked about that last week. Remember, I had Martin Jones.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so you're just right. Okay, yeah. So that wasn't an addition to this. That was separate from that. Okay. No, I just wondered. Listen, we run out of time here, pal. We want everybody to check that out at NHL.com. Your ESPN article is up there as well. The book is out, and Rob's absolutely right. If your family did not get it for you for Christmas, then they must feel shame. Thanks for everything in 2016, pal. I know it was a big one for you with the book coming out. I wish you all the success in 2017. But again, Rob, as always, appreciate the visit.
Yeah, happy New Year to both of you and to, of course, all your listeners.